you cannot have success without some suffering. Those lessons are learned because it hurts. And we cannot prevent the problems. We cannot prevent the suffering, but we can sure make it feel a little less painful.
Welcome to the Pursuit of Profit podcast. Today, we're joined by a very special guest. Zachary Butler came from a family of entrepreneurs. He talks about his journey starting out as a multi-unit franchise owner in his early 20s, having tremendous success at a young age, failing, falling for bankruptcy, learning a ton of lessons along the way, and now being on his way to owning 25 brands by the year 2025. An incredible story, value for prospective franchise owners, value for franchisors. Give this one a listen and enjoy episode 7. So we've known you for quite a while now, many years. I don't think you or I realized how similar our beginnings are in franchising. We both started out as multi-unit franchisees, then went to franchise development, and then we kind of did our different things. But there's lessons there, right? As small business owners, you have some wins, you have some losses, you learn how to mitigate risk, right? There, sometimes we learn more from the losses than the wins.
Just to kind of, I just want to go through the names here. There's just so much going on here. You have Mighty Dog, Blingle, iFoam, Heroes Landscaping, Gatsby Glass, Groovy Hughes Painting, Bumblebee Blinds, and now Stand Strong Fencing. Is that the most recent brand, the fencing brand?
That is the most recent.
Okay.
And we just had our first Discover Day today. I think we had 14 buying groups there.
Wow.
Talk about your beginnings. Talk about some lessons that you learned along the way. A lot of people listening to this are prospective franchise owners. What could we learn from your journey?
You know, my background is fairly unique in franchising. I ran out of high school. I took a part-time job with a nutrition store that had just opened. And the story behind that brand was the gentleman that owned the top grossing GNCs broke off and started what was called Complete Nutrition. And about 2 weeks into my journey there, I think one guy had moved to corporate and then the next guy quit and there was no manager. So I remember asked, how much does a manager make? And it was like $80,000. I was like, I'm the manager. Sign me up. And I was the manager and basically worked hoping to close, quit going to school. And I was really good at that. I was really good at working with people. And we built that up into one of the best corporate stores. Then they started to franchise. And the founder's nephew opened the first franchise location. And we talked every day. And I was like, this is what I need to do. So I worked with the founder. I come up with this plan where I was going to try to convince him to basically co-sign an SBA loan and let me go be one of the first franchisees. And about 10 seconds into my pitch, he's like, I'm in, let's do it. So at 21, I moved to Tallahassee, Florida, opened my first franchise location. And I used $20,000 of my life savings, and the actual franchisor co-signed the SBA loan. And, you know, that was an interesting time to live in Tallahassee, Florida. I was 21, owning a business. First year was about over $1 million in revenue. Never made that type of money in my life. And then if I look back from the day I opened to 3 years, I had opened 3 more and acquired 3 more. So I had 7 locations and we were on this $8 million trajectory. And it's interesting when you look at which businesses you want to franchise. In weight loss, 2 things happen when you sell somebody weight loss products. It either works and they don't buy it again, or it doesn't work and they don't buy it again. And we quickly exhausted our new customer base. And at the exact same time, Amazon came in, bodybuilding.com came on with an e-commerce platform, and we just got outgunned. And what I didn't know at the time is I was personally guaranteed on all 7 leases for 10 years. And there was 2 landlords that controlled 6 of the leases, and I ended up losing everything and filing bankruptcy, hitting rock bottom.
Unbelievable.
I still remember, it was just like, looking back, I was like, how did it get to this point? And I was a 23-year-old kid that had scaled really fast with no structure. And didn't really have the business acumen, to be frank.
But I'm fascinated how people love hearing about the misses, not always the home runs. It is amazing how someone, like, you're so humble, right? You're super confident, but you're a humble guy. Like, you don't have a problem leading in with your failure. You have no problem with it.
You know, if you guys have seen me present, there's a quote in every one of my presentations that's good decisions come from experience and experience comes from bad decisions. You know, you learn a lot about yourself when you have nowhere left to fall. And looking back, you know, in the beginning, obviously you're angry and you have all this blame. And I read a fantastic book called The Success Principles, which, you know, you have to take ownership of where you are. And looking at it is like, yeah, I overspent. I didn't create budgets. I should have got an attorney to help me review leases. And looking at that, I ramped up these businesses so fast. I took over locations and flipped them to profitability. But what I couldn't control was the trajectory of that industry. And I should have created more cash flow. I was good at people. I was good at sales. And I was good at advertising. But I didn't really have any structure, back-end support. And there was another franchisee who I was trying to work out a sale with. And just there was no way the leases were going to work. And I still remember I wanted equity. That was important to me. And he had like 10 or 15 locations at the time. I can't remember exactly. And we figured something out to where I would get a $23,000 annual distribution for equity in this future growth that we were going to do. And
okay,
we grew that to 68 locations and over $40 million revenue in 3 years and did that for a decade. And we owned about 35% of the system. And there were some fantastic people that was along with that journey. And a lot of them actually work at Horsestar, believe it or not. And what that taught me is I went through an EOS implementation where I really learned a business operating system and the importance of accountability and structure, which is not my strongest characteristic. And from there, I still remember I woke up we made this big change and I was not aligned. We made this big change. I knew it wasn't going to work. And we parted our ways and got into franchise development. And Monster Tree Service, which is my now partner's first franchise brand, that was the first brand that I worked on. And there's certain people that you're just destined to meet. And we just, something clicked where I think we've still talked every day for 7 years.
Wow.
And I remember the first 30 days was terrible. We didn't get one lead. And he's like, what are we going to do? And I said, I was like, I got a plan. I'm going to call every franchise consultant in the country until they literally block our numbers. And I still remember the spreadsheet was like 2,000 contacts and we had people saying I was harassing them. And it took about 60 days of that till we built this huge pipeline and went on this big run and built a big brand in the tree service space.
Is it true that you met your business partner in a pool?
We met in a pool in Cancun at the first ever FCC conference.
It was FCC. I was wondering, is that 17, 18?
It was July 17th or 18th.
We were there. So you guys weren't working together at the time?
We just had started some conversations, but had never met in person. We met there and we were talking in the pool and it was just like, you know, you meet some people and it feels like, gosh, this is, you know, you really have to work to make these conversations. I mean, we were laughing and having a great time in, I mean, a couple of minutes.
There are takeaways there. Just going back a little bit, you know, you talked about limiting personal guarantees, being fiscally responsible, accountability, right? There's like little, to me, one of the overarching lessons is for people who feel like it's just not the right time, move quickly and fail early. I mean, you filed for bankruptcy in your 20s. Look at where you are today.
Well, you know, there's one of the things I think that looking back, what I was really trying to do for 3 or 4 years straight was I was trying to constantly find this next home run that was going to fix my problems. I was going to make this new relationship, come up with this new ad. Or I remember like, we got to make this big change to like solve all the problems. And that was my problem. And what I know now is that if you just take 6 to 9 KPIs and you follow those week over week and you get results on just 3 of those, week over week, in 12 weeks, you can hit a home run, but it doesn't happen overnight. And I still remember I kept trying to throw this next big idea in and it just kept keeping everybody organized. And that was one of the things that as you get more and more experience, you realize that you don't have to hit a home run out of the gate, but if you make if you can improve like your close ratio by 1.5% for 8 weeks straight, that's really significant.
Absolutely. Over the life cycle. Go back to, so you're in your 20s. Number one, you did something in your 20s that the average person won't do in a lifetime, which is multi-unit ownership. So I give you a ton of credit. You scaled 7 locations, millions of dollars in top line, signed a ton of leases. You know, a lot of people feel like it needs to be perfect. It doesn't need to be perfect. Just execute. And what you did is really enviable. You just executed. You run 100 miles an hour and just got it done. Yeah, I understand what happened. I get it. Well, what you know what's interesting about what happened to you? Let's be fair. You were disrupted and then you became the disruptor. And we're going to get into that. You really got disrupted by online buying of nutrition products, no?
It was definitely part of the issue. And my brother, I still remember a conversation with my brother-in-law. He goes, I've always been jealous of you, Zach. When you have an idea, you're like all in and you just do it. And like, I just can't do that. And sometimes it sounds like a good thing, but sometimes it's a character flaw where like, when I want to do something, I think about like, what would it be like not to do that? And so what I've learned to date is that every organization that I've ever been a part of has grown at a super fast pace. Yeah. And the more times we would, every single time that we did that, you start to learn that you start to identify these things that, hey, if you grow fast, this is going to happen. And you can start to kind of, as you're driving down the road, you can kind of drive around those issues. And so to date, every organization has grown at an exponential pace. But if that's the only speed you know, that speed becomes normal and you get good at identifying what those things could be.
Josh, the listeners, like we know you, so they don't know the gravity of everything that you've done. And I don't think we have enough time to go through all of it. But just to give people an idea, you're in your 20s and you're doing the nutrition brand, scaling it to 7, ultimately closed it, picked yourself up, go to a pool. I mean, I know you're in Fran Dev. Go to a pool, meet Josh. Okay. It's a bromance. Instantly, you two connect. You're like, all right, I like this guy. We see the world the same way. It's just, it's easy. It's natural. It's flowing. You get involved in Monster Tree. Scale that to, from memory, I think 250.
It was like 240. And
240.
Towards the end of that journey, we stumbled upon Redbox Plus, which is a roll-off dumpster with, which you guys know, a portable restroom attached to it with a patent. And it took us 3 years to take that from 5 to 305. And that's something that, I'll tell you, we opened every location and had no closures. And so that we're pretty proud of that journey. And now that's an interesting story where Belfort was our biggest customer nationwide. And they came to us and they wanted to buy that business. And it's kind of hard to say no when their line in an expenditure for Belfort for roll-off dumpsters was far more than our annual revenue as a franchisor.
Wow.
And so that was we sold that brand too early. But at the same time, the franchisees are absolutely flourishing because that was one of the most profitable customer bases was restoration that they could work with.
Who purchased Monster Tree?
Authority Brands did.
Authority purchases Monster Tree. Fast forward, Redbox is acquired by Belfort, largest disaster restoration company, I think, in the world.
In the world.
In the world, right. I mean, then there's them and Surf Pro and Paul Davis and so on. Belfort is big. They're up there. Then now are we up to horsepower or not yet?
Yep. So then Josh really was the controlling interest in those. And anything that I'm a part of, I'm going to act like an owner, even if I don't own it. And we built this relationship where it was, hey, you're going to get this big reward. Do you want the reward or are we doing something else? I was like, we're doing something else. And, we pushed, and my wife and I sold everything. And again, we went chips all in the horsepower. And I still remember I told her that, listen, we're going to have to walk away from a good income and we're going to have to sell a lot to do this. And I just knew myself that if I wasn't going to be all in, then it's not going to work. And we were just about to have our first child. And I was like, it's going to work. You got to believe me. And Mighty Dog was our first brand. And I remember we rolled that out and I have never worked so hard in my entire life. I remember I traded our first office that we had. I traded meat on a monthly basis to rent the office.
Wow. Believe it or not. Wow. A barter system for rent. That's crazy. For Mighty Dog Roofing, that was brand one under the horsepower brands. That's brand number one.
Yeah, but Josh and I still, we always look at it and go, if we don't have to spend money on certain things, we don't need luxury. We want to do the right thing. We want to be responsible with growing the business and whatever we're going to do to make it work, we're all in.
Zach, talk about this vertical, home services. It's a category that's been successful forever in franchising. Basically, what you're doing, as far as I'm concerned, is what Xponential Fitness did in the fitness space, right? Acquiring a bunch of different boutique fitness brands. You're doing in home services. It seems to be where like all of the private equity money's going right now. What is it about this category? First of all, that's what you chose, and like that's where everyone wants to be right now.
So yeah. I think if you look at what franchising is a nationally backed company, yet with locally owned locations that have great systems and processes, access to technology, and a proven process. Well, when you look at home services, there is always a ton of competition, which is caused by a lot of consumer demand, but where that competition is very, very fragmented. And so they're very unsophisticated, and they don't have to be. So what better place for franchising to come in where they can leverage systems and processes, technology, a national brand, yet locally owned locations, and disrupt a lot. I mean, they don't have to be the best in the market. They just have to be better than the bottom people to have a big business in home services. Now you take it, it's recession resistant, it's pandemic resistant. I mean, it's not that I like to say that it's easier, but it sure is a lot easier to go out and capture some of that business than if you look at food or fitness or other concepts.
That you're talking about a $450 billion market cap home services. Massive. It is a massive, massive industry. And it is highly fragmented. You want to hear a funny story? So I'm on the board of my HOA and we need tree trimming. We have a $10 million budget as a neighborhood. So I start calling tree companies. No one answers the telephone. Guess who answers the telephone? Monster Tree Service. Put a smile on my face. I go, it's unbelievable. It's true. It's local. They're trained. You support them. The one thing about you that is really, it's really amazing. And I commend you for it. Most people are really just good at selling, but you're unique, right? Because you're all about that back end support, answer the phone, support them, marketing, make it rain, give them leads. I can't say that about every brand. Brands are really good at selling and they really fall short on support. Not you, not horsepower.
There's a great saying, there's a big difference between needing to win and not wanting to lose. And there's a lot of brands that don't want to lose and they'll do whatever it takes to win, which a lot of times you cut corners. That's what Josh and I looked at is I was a franchisee that lost everything and filed bankruptcy. And it was nobody's fault but my own. But could the franchisor have prevented that? They absolutely could have, but it was not their responsibility. It was important to me where we had to do things differently if we wanted to build something great. And, from the beginning, we were trying to give more entrepreneurship and leadership and business operation support, not just, hey, how do you go sell a roof and install a roof? But hey, how do you run a business? How do you have a meeting? What KPIs should you be tracking on a weekly basis? Let's get down to the fundamentals of how to run a business, because every discovery, when I ask the question, what generation of entrepreneur are you, first, second, or third? Most people are a first-time entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And being an entrepreneur is not with a faint heart.
Traditionally, we've seen some of these homes. You think about a Molly Maid, a sort of Pro Painters, right? A Mr. Handyman. These are kind of owner operator, some of them may even be like chuck in the truck, right? Types of businesses. I feel like the home services space, because of brands like you guys, is evolving. I mean, I've had several clients invest in home horsepower brands. These are white collar executives looking to replace significant. I mean, this is not like I need a six figure income. It's like I need to make like $500,000. And they're doing it with home services today, where I feel like people would never be doing that in the past. So why are you attracting empire builders, or how are you attracting empire builders as opposed to like the chuck in the truck type of investor? I feel like part of that has to be because you're taking on some responsibility as a way of ensuring their success. you're doing more for them.
Yeah. You know, there's a TED talk by Simon Sinek called The Law of Diffusion of Innovation on how people make buying decisions. And typically what you see in emerging brands is the early adopter or the innovator. And he explained, Simon Sinek explains that in the video as, these are the people that buy the $40,000 flat screen TV because they want to be first. And they buy the new iPhone no matter what. And those do not make the best franchisees. They're high, you know, they're typically high maintenance. They don't make the best decisions. They're very emotional. Where we're getting the early and late majority to get into our brands early. And we're doing that, I believe, because we have a track record of success. Number one, we to date, Josh and I have launched more emerging franchise brands from one location to 100 active locations than anyone in franchise history. And then because we grow our brands aggressively, which is a good thing as a franchisee, we had to vertically integrate a lot of the services that support them, which was very expensive, very stressful, but it was either slow down our growth and find more and more vendors to support us or bring it in-house where we now have this triangular accountability where if the sales team, for example, doesn't bring people on with the right expectations, the brand knows where to find them. And if the brand's not doing their part to support them, the sales team, they're in the same building. And then if the shared services aren't keeping up, it affects both the brand and development where there's now this, nobody can place the finger on whose fault it is because it's all the same company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you did a great job doing that. Your timing too of getting into home services is just remarkable. I was looking up, there is $28 trillion in home equity in America. Think of that. That's $274,000 of equity per household in this country. And your timing is just, your timing is literally perfect.
So this will be interesting. It didn't feel perfect. I remember we started working on the FDD in July of 2020. As you remember what was happening in July of 2020.
Right. Okay, right, right.
It was like, I mean, we had a couple conversations. It's like, what's going to happen? And I still remember the conversation. I was like, I'm chips all in, baby. It's got to work. And we ordered our first franchise location in February of 2021. And since then, we've awarded, I think we're approaching 1,500 units today.
Wow. Holy mackerel. With the eight brands?
With eight brands. My EDO will break 500 this year, probably.
Wow.
There is a guy on Twitter. I want to say his name is Cole. I'm pretty sure he's a Mighty Dog franchisee, and he's Cole Simpson. He's documenting and kind of journaling his day to day in getting this business going. And I also know that he's trying to build a robust Twitter following, but like this guy's dealing with like FBI raids. I mean, like this guy has some crazy stories, but he seems to be killing it. Like he bought corporate housing for his sales team and his crew. And like this guy's building what appears to be a massive organization. Is this real? Or is this guy making up stories to build his Twitter account?
I mean, I can't speak for every story, but I remember him coming to, so Josh and I still talk to every candidate in the process. And I remember talking to him and you're like, he's a younger guy, but he asked great questions. And, you know, there's certain people that understand what it's going to mean to be an entrepreneur. And he wanted that life. I mean, he's like, I know this is going to be extremely hard and it's going to be so stressful, but like, I wouldn't have it any other way. And we knew he was going to be great from day one, to be honest.
It's interesting. He's building quite the brand there. It appears, and he seems to be really, really happy, and he's sharing it with a lot of people on Twitter and getting a lot of attention for the brand, so that's good. You guys started with Mighty Dog, so it seemed like at first, it's like, okay, they're doing what they did with Monster Tree. They're going after these categories that lack sophistication, these categories that lack national branding. They come in with all this incredible technology and support and all these systems, and they just dominate and easily take market share. As you're growing here, you're getting into painting, you're getting into bumblebee blinds or window coverings. These are categories that have been done very successfully in franchising. What's the criteria? You guys have to be vetting through hundreds of brands, I'm assuming. What are you looking for?
So there is actually a list of criteria that we go through. So first and foremost, it's going to be in home services. The second is that it has to be a service needed by all. Now, we have a very unique operational model in franchising that is not cheap. So, I mean, we have a full siloed leadership team for every brand before there is an FDD, which you don't see in franchising. And so to make that work, we have to have large average unit volume. And so when you think about a mosquito only concept, there's just not enough average unit volume there for us to make our model work. So we have to have larger average unit volume concepts. And that's when you see typically large average ticket industries. Now, there's a couple other things that make it unique is that it's got to be a lot of consumer demand and there's got to be a lot of competition. If you are looking at a franchise and there is no competition, you should not buy that franchise. To go out and prove that this new service or this new product is going to be needed, I mean, that's not a franchise. I don't know what you call that, but so it's going to be huge. It's going to be a lot of consumer demand, a lot of competition, and fragmented competition. And then the last two are somewhat unique is that we know that we need to be able to help or assist franchisees in finding the labor sources. So concepts that are going to have very specialized labor that are going to be recruitable, that's something that we really have to take a hard look at to solve that problem. And the last is that we have to be able to help with lead generation from the corporate office. It's not what they rely on, but you know, for example, we had a parking lot striping concept that we passed on just because we have to find specific franchisees with specific relationships to make that work. And that's not something that we would be confident doing. And so as we check off all those boxes, you know, there's still several other industries that we're going to be rolling out in 2024 and 2025. But when you go down all of those, you know, all of those typically attract a similar candidate. They need big revenues. They need to drop a lot of dollars to the bottom line and they want to build a big business. Those industries all kind of fit.
Love it. And quick question, because I read something. Did you really buy $10 million worth of holiday lighting for inventory?
I think it was more than that, but we don't. If you ever come to Omaha, we'll take you to the warehouse. I think it's got 44-foot ceilings, 55,000 square feet. There is a ton of product. And we sell that we sell that all over the country. We even sell some to authority brands. And so don't ask me why we're in the Christmas light business, but we're in it.
We're in it, right. Yeah. I mean, apparently it's a successful business. It's seasonal. You can it's like being a teacher, make a year's worth of money and a fraction of the time. Have a good quality of life. Blingle's doing good?
Blingle's crushing. I'll tell you, when you look at the EBITDA that can be driven from holiday lights, I mean, it's almost too high to put in FDD. But we actually disclosed the depreciation on those lights that obviously wouldn't affect cash flow. But I mean, it's really high because you go lease the product the first year. The second year, it's just labor.
Right.
This is their time of year. I mean, I'm seeing people doing this for Halloween now. It's getting crazy.
I mean, sports teams, Halloween, Veterans Day. I mean, people love lights.
I heard Home Depot sells out every year that 12-foot skeleton that you put in your front yard. You ever see that thing? There's people flipping it on the internet.
My wife wanted one of those so bad for her Butler Beef storefront. Absolutely ridiculous.
Right. They sell out every year. They can't keep it in. People buy them just to put them on the internet and charge a premium for them. This is just a Halloween ornament. Yeah. I mean, my neighborhood, there's cranes everywhere and cherry pickers putting lights on their roofs. They're paying an average of $1,200 to $1,500 per home just for the lights. Not for the other decorate, just the lighting. They don't own it. They're basically getting it from you, the vendor, putting it on the home, and then they're taking the lights with them. Lights don't work, they get new lights.
How seasonal is it, Zach? Is it a holiday lighting brand, or are you guys doing year-round exterior lighting? Is it evolving?
It's all year. So we do permanent lighting, we do event lighting, landscape lighting, holiday lighting. So it's an exterior lighting brand. So during the holiday season, you're pretty much focused on holiday. And during the non-holiday seasons, you're doing a lot of landscape lighting, patio lighting, event lighting, permanent lighting. And so your focus kind of switches to that, which works great because it's a perfect way where you go do holiday lighting, you can upsell landscape lighting and vice versa.
We like hub and spoke. That's why I love Heroes Lawn Care. It's not the sexiest service, but from a business model standpoint, for a while there, Cliff and I were in the property restoration business, and we loved all the different revenue streams in that model, right? We would always say to people, like, why would you look at a carpet cleaning business? You could do that in property restoration. Why would you look at a duct cleaning franchise? You could do that in property restoration. Why would you look at a dryer vent cleaning franchise? You could do that. Like, in property restoration, you can kind of be all things to all people. We say yes to everything. So we built a multi-million dollar business in that industry. And you can kind of say the same about Heroes. It's like multiple businesses in one. We love that. The potential for scale there is just awesome.
You know, well, one thing that's interesting that I think people need to look out for, though, so some of the best advice I've ever received from is focus creates wealth and diversification preserves it. There's a lot of service lines, but your focus was the commercial maintenance. Heroes has a lot of services, but the focus is the exterior of the property. When some brands have too many service lines that don't have similar alignment of focus, that's really scary to me. I remember I went and looked at, it was a batteries brand that did like battery replacement, cell phone repair. They had like 18 or, they, I mean, it was, I mean, I looked around and I was like, this just gives me anxiety.
It's usually the sign of a dying brand. Cliff, remember we spoke to a Froyo franchise that we were looking at, yes, that was dying, and we were looking to take it over and basically flip it. So we spoke to the VP and he's like, yeah, you'll be able to turn this thing around. We're going to start just selling cookies and pretzels and chips. And it's like, all right,
yeah,
you're reaching.
Passport photographs.
Passport, exactly. Yeah. You're clearly dying. Okay, I'll give you 6 months and you're out of business.
You can't make money in yogurt anymore. It's impossible. You cannot make money as a standalone yogurt shop without adding 15 ancillary services. It just doesn't work anymore. It's just a bad business. And it's just so cyclical too. We love yogurt. We hate yogurt. Then we love it. Every like 5 to 10 years, we cycle through certain brands. Home improvements, sexy, not, it doesn't matter. It's the slow and steady that win the race.
It just works.
I love your focus. It's so true. I love that focus comment. Because we use the analogy, Zach, of, which is very similar to your quote, an average a GP, a general practitioner in America, they're making 6 figures. But a heart surgeon, right? A brain surgeon, a podiatrist, an oncologist, when you specialize with laser focus on something, it's wealth creation. You want to cast a wide net and be all things to all people, you'll eke out a mediocre living. You want to be a general practitioner, get used to making less money than a salesman selling solar panels on a roof.
You know, there's we could have a whole nother show about just mistakes that we made along our journey and what we've learned, but you know, you cannot have success without some suffering. Those lessons are learned because it hurts. And what we're trying to do is we cannot prevent the problems. We cannot prevent the suffering, but we can sure make it feel a little less painful. And so what I said this morning to a group of 40-some buying groups was, at the end of the day, our goal is to be the best partner that we can be. And we don't know everything. We're not going to be the best at every single thing, but I can bet you, I can promise you that no one is going to go to bat, make changes, adapt, work with franchisees on what makes the most sense than us, because we've done it more than anyone else. We know that that's a part of this partnership. And I think a lot of new franchisors think that they're the best at everything and that their franchisees need to follow suit and follow the process. The process isn't perfect, or else you wouldn't franchise it. The process gets perfected by more and more franchisees that open up around the country that bring their different walks of life and that create new best practices that change the brand trajectory. That's what franchising is to me. I think that's where we looked at it is, hey, the best ideas are coming from the guys in the trenches, which are the franchisees,
definitely,
the entrepreneurs out there. What we can do is help take those ideas, replicate them, and improve what the system can provide.
Zach, you own the brands outright. There are no founders. You don't leave anyone sticking around, quote unquote. It's like, no, we're acquiring you and you're out, or no, you want to drag them along.
Yeah, yes and no. So when we do an acquisition, we own most of the controlling interest. Our expectation from the founder is you can be involved, not be involved. we would prefer them to be involved, but we build the brand as if they're not going to be. We don't depend on them in the day-to-day. And what is important to us is the people that we partner with, we want to make sure that journey is worth something. The journey of the exit's not the fun part. Building the business is what's fun. When you get to start to build a business, I mean, it's intoxicating. I mean, it is so much fun. It's all you think about. It's all you want to do. And as you build it, you know, the exit's not the fun part. It's what you do along that journey. And if you don't have good people around you for that journey is not going to be enjoyable.
Absolutely.
We talk about focus, right? I mean, you guys are there. There are people who franchise their businesses after spending a lifetime in this industry, right? Obsessing over this business. You guys are taking other people's businesses and just launching franchise brand after franchise brand. Is each brand getting its own individual executive team?
Correct.
You must be onboarding people like crazy.
So we're approaching 300 employees. When we own a recruiting agency that helps us find people for our franchisees as well as us, we have specific people that do the onboarding for franchisees. Every brand has their own siloed executive team where if there's a problem that needs to get escalated, there's another leadership team above them that can escalate problems to. But I mean, there's $500,000 worth of payroll before there's even an FDD.
Per brand?
Per brand.
Wow.
So we've acquired two concepts today that tried to franchise their business. And they invested in the beginning, they invested less than a franchisee would invest in franchising their business as a franchisor.
Right, right.
And so we talk to franchise concepts all the time. And they're like, how do you guys avoid the problems? And the answer is you don't. And how you work with your franchisees is what makes you special. And you have to make sure that it's a partnership and not you can't come in there with an iron hammer all the time. You got to work with people. I mean, it's a people industry. You got to work with people.
Speaking of people and speaking of hiring, I was told that when you interview candidates for really any position within the company, you don't even ask about college.
No.
Have you ever met someone who attributed their success to their university?
I mean, we have some attorneys and we have some accountants, obviously, that have a degree, but the best people you hire are going to be referrals. And when you get a referral, do you look where they went to college?
No.
But, you know, there's something to be said about there are things you learn in college with soft skills and you build relationships, but you don't need to pay a fortune to go do that. But I don't know how many people I've interviewed and I've never looked at where they go to school. I mean, I could not tell you where one of our employees went to college, I'll be honest.
Wow. That's great.
If people are listening to this, you know, I think it's important is if you did not grow up in a family business, there is something missing inside of you. I can tell you that, and I can't explain it to you. The level of pride that I have for what my family built and what it taught me. And I cannot imagine looking for somebody else. It would not work for my mom, how my mind would work today, but that's because he grew up in that. And so if you're a first generation entrepreneur, I mean, it's on you to take the leap. I mean, you have to at least try.
What's the long-term vision, Zach? You guys have had some successful exits. You're building this thing. You know, the concern could be, hey, you know, I like these guys. I believe in them. Are they going to peel this off and sell it as well? Or are they going to hang around? What's the vision for HPB?
We get asked all the time. And what I try to first reassure people on is that we are so big that if we sold to someone, you really would not feel a difference at a franchisee level, number one, because every brand has its own leadership team. There's an executive team over that. Then there's a leadership team above them. Nobody would be able to come in and replace everyone. We're just too big. Nobody. So that's one reassurance. But at this point, we are well capitalized. You know, for us to go out and find a strategic partner, we know how to do it better than anyone else. So I don't know who would be that strategic partner unless it was a Google or, you know, some huge company. But I mean, you guys know that we love this life. I mean, we're in it every single day. We still talk to every candidate in the process as founders. And our focus is still on horsepower brands. So our current goal right now is to get to 25 concepts by 2025, which is a franchise concept as well as a supporting vertical. And then from there, I do imagine us doing a couple of things. Taking our shared services out to other franchise concepts for support. And the second is build another arm similar to home services, but in a different industry, which I Again, we're focused. So we've talked about, and we could eventually do this, but we don't spend any time or energy on that.
Right. Absolutely amazing what you've built, you and Josh. It's great. It really is. I mean, you could do another hour. Maybe we could wrap up, Zach, with just giving a listener who's going to be, most of the people that are following us on LinkedIn, watching our videos and liking them, they don't own businesses. They work and they want to own something. They dream about it. So if there's any advice that you would have for someone, and I mean, I think that there's so much about you. Are you even 30? Like, how old are you now?
I'm 30, 35. I turned 36 in two weeks.
Unbelievable. Well, happy birthday. I mean, you think about your journey has been in such a short period of time, what you've accomplished, people don't accomplish in a lifetime. So what advice, I mean, just looking back, reflecting on your life, what advice would you have for someone wanting to not necessarily be you, but want to just start their journey as an entrepreneur?
When you look at owning a business, number one, you have to know that it is going to be very difficult and it's going to be very stressful. But like I said before, if you did not grow up in a family business, I cannot explain it to you what it means. And the only thing better is having children, to be honest. And to live life and not at least experience what, even if you failed, you'd still experience what it tasted like. So I think you look at it, not everybody is designed to own a business, but franchising is designed to let A, B, and C players be an entrepreneur. And so there's three things that I tell people, but when they're at the end of the process, and that's, and all I started off with, you're going to get 80% of the way there and you're not going to get enough information to make it feel good. It's going to be scary. And if it wasn't scary, then everybody would be an entrepreneur. So you're going to get 80% of the way there. And there's three questions that you have to answer. Number one is, do you believe in the industry and the brand you're getting into? Can businesses exist in that industry? Are there other roofing concepts out there? Yes. So that answers the first question. The second question is the brand, not just Horsepower, but the brand you're partnering with, they don't need to be the best, but do you fit their culture and do you believe that they're going to do whatever it takes to support you within reason, obviously? And you have to be able to say yes to that. The third and final question is if you have to look yourself in the mirror and say, do you believe that you can do this? If you can answer all three of those, wire the money, sign the damn agreements, become an entrepreneur.
All right, Mr. Butler. Very impressive, man. Thank you so much for your time. You're a busy guy. We appreciate you chatting with us. And we'll probably have you on at some point again, get an update.
Love to come on anytime you guys want to have me.